sharing and feeding from and giving an opportunity to everybody to partake in this amazing adventure in entertainment, in the entertainment business and in the media business, generally speaking. I think the model is being rewritten as we speak in the way that we consume entertainment, in the way that we produce entertainment. That's what we're trying to do. And the future is really going to dictate how we see it.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Into the Fire, where we take a deeper look into NFTs and the people and stories shaping an industry. Today, we're joined by Tommaso Sandretto, the Chief Revenue and Investment Officer for Blockchain Creative Labs. Blockchain Creative Labs recently raised $100 million in a partnership with Fox Animation and Bento Box to bridge the gap between TV animation and Web3. Their first venture is an animated series created by Dan Harmon of Rick and Morty fame. The series is called Crapopolis, set to debut in 2023. Crapopolis is currently minting an NFT collection of 10,420 crap chickens that gives holders unique, unprecedented access to the show. Here to give us a sneak peek into how Web3 is infiltrating the mainstream is Tommaso Sandretto.
Hi, John. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, so why don't you start by giving us a little background of like how you got into the space and where you started working and your journey into where we are now?
Yeah, I think journey is the right word to use in this case. So yeah, I have a common thread. There's a common thread between everybody in this space. We all started doing something else, and we all got an interest and found an opportunity. So I'm an investment banker by trade. So I started my career as an investment banker in London for Citibank, and then went on doing a whole other series of roles in real estate, construction, hotels, and kept on keeping my, the financial component of my career always present. The reality is that during COVID, like everybody else, was stuck inside our homes and had a lot of time in our hands to, do some research, study, and have probably like two or three close friends, but mostly one good friend, Johnny, who has been a degen since really the beginning of like Bitcoin, was one of the first guys that was mining. And during COVID really, really onboarded me and handheld me inside the whole concept of wallets and MetaMask and most into the DeFi world, right? And cryptocurrencies. And once you are in there, NFTs were the next hot topic. And so I started falling into the NFTs and had a, great experience and passionate about both what they can do and the future. My concept is that this is really an opportunity for anybody who hasn't had the opportunity in the previous wave, so Web 2 wave, so late 90s, early 2000, to really have an impact on society. And this technology can really, and we'll talk about it more later, but can really reshape the media entertainment industry and the way that we live our lives. And so with an opportunity like this, I dropped my previous employer and jumped on the board at BC, jump on board BCL immediately, and very excited to be with them.
And so how did you find BCL? How did you find them, or how did that even come about?
Oh, so it was all through connection, through personal context. And yeah. I was never a crypto evangelist, but I was definitely very excited about the space. And so I started onboarding one friend, the other friend, and the other friend. And so one of these friends told me like, hey, you should really come and, Fox is doing this. You should really come and help them out or help see if there's something for you there, because you seem very interested into the space. And so I literally met Scott in July last year. We had one of those incredibly philosophically charged and animated conversations around the space, and quickly realized that we would be a good team for each other. And so from there on, it's just history. It was just like countless thousands of hours into BCL and into the space.
So were you collecting NFTs, or how's your the NFT journey been?
I collected a few NFTs at first. I got in trouble a couple of times in terms of really exciting about certain projects that, because I didn't do enough research, I did like a proper beginner. I went through the whole process. But I think that what's really fascinating to me is the NFT as a key is really a key to opening a variety of different environments, variety of different worlds, and really a way to communicate better with the fans. And so the use of the NFT is what really drives my interest in it, because it's really what can be done. And we have seen it as well already in the industry, where we went from strictly PFPs to, we talk about utility, we talk about now dynamic NFTs, we talk about lots of ways to use these NFTs. And I think that's really the what drives my interest into it.
I guess in terms of, like, you know, NFTs, and you're, you know, explaining that to, like, friends or family or whatever, like, how do you even just explain that to them so that they have an idea of, like, what's going on?
Luckily, I was always surrounded by a group of friends that that was more aware of these things, more, you know, more on the technological side of the world. But the hardest part was explaining my parents. You know, I was, you know, telling your parents, it's like, hey, I'm going from, you know, a very stable, secure career and job in finance, and I'm jumping into a technology company doing exactly what. And still now it's very complicated. They're very excited about what I do, but it's very interesting for them to understand this. And the reality is that once you take the time to explain people the concept of ownership of digital assets, instead of just, you know, comparing digital assets to any other asset, and the opportunities that the blockchain presents with the concept of the ledger, then everybody kind of realizes, by bringing up a couple of real life, not real life, but like physical examples, such as, you know, the easiest ones are sneakers or luxury goods or art or something of the sort. So the concept of provenance, the concept of proof of ownership, and how can it be disruptive for any industry? It only takes probably like half an hour conversation of, and then everybody gets it pretty easily.
So you meet Scott Greenberg and you're like, okay, now we'll do NFTs, you know, with Fox. Like, were you there from the early start of that, or when did you join?
I joined after maybe a few months later. So after we did the deal, so BCL did a deal with WWE. So after we did the deal for WWE, I probably joined probably a month or 2 months after that. And yeah, that's a little bit where everything kind of started.
Because I'm coming from that world too, like, I, you know, working in animation, I'm really curious and interested about seeing, like, Web 2, or, you know, not even Web 2, just animation collectors, you know, animation, artwork, you know, going digital and people collecting that, because you see people collecting physical pieces. What has been the process like convincing some of these, like, brands or, you know, bigger IPs to, like, look at this in a new way? Or, you know, how has the process been of trying to convince them to, like, jump on board and be like, let's do this? Because, you know, you're working with some of the top brands in the world.
You know, when you work, one of the big reasons why BCL is very different in this space is also because of our nature, right? We are owned by Fox, and we have the opportunity to fish in the IP pond that Fox has, but also has an incredible pool, and it has an incredible amount of, how can I say, you know, seriousness attached to it. You know, everybody knows that we're going to be here for the long term. We're not just a 3 months, 6 months, or a couple of years plan. So it's actually quite interesting, because once you send out an email and you have a Fox.com attached to it, people take you very seriously. And then on top of that, you know, bringing you back, Scott, you know, comes from the animation industry, as you know very well. And Bento Box is such an incredible machine. It's extremely famous. It's extremely successful animation studio. And being able to count on over, I think we can count on over 600 different artists right now that are working for Bento. So it's really kind of a unique position for us, you know. And this comes back a little bit to the grassroots, or how BCL came to be, as really being, if you put it this way, take an animation studio, take a pure technological tech companies, and you merge them together, and they have a baby, BCL would come out, right? And it's kind of the concept of having Scott Greenberg, who runs Bento, and Melody Hildebrand, who's the head of chief info security officer at Fox, an extremely savvy technologist, come together and just be like, okay, what can we do in the space that it's really the that represents in a perfect overlap in a Venn diagram, and all of a sudden BCL is born. And you know, we've also been very lucky from the beginning because the, you know, all the senior management at Fox supports completely this venture and believes in us. I can't even explain how much they believe in us, and they look at us as really as a huge opportunity to go and disrupt the way that media and entertainment infrastructure comes to be in the future, right? So we saw everything from, you know, broadcasting to streaming. So, and Web3 is kind of the next moat, and how do we build this? So there's a whole portion of BCL that focuses only and solely on infrastructure, and how can we provide the best possible Web3 infrastructure, really digging deep on research and product for Fox and for the future across the entire company. So it's really, it's very important to understand that the concept of IP, NFT, blockchain infrastructures are all part of our world. And it's a very big effort, the one that we're trying to lead.
Yeah. So when you're saying like that there's a lot of like features that the NFTs, you know, bring to the table that we've never seen before and they excite you, like what are some of those features that excite you?
I mean, to me, reaching the fans that really are willing to spend the extra hours watching, the ones that would watch like six times the same series to catch all the different details in the different episodes, is really who we want to reach and who we want to serve, is the true fans. And giving them the opportunity through the ownership of an NFT to go in behind the scenes, meeting some of the cast, meeting the directors, spending time with them, or even deciding what's going to happen in the next episodes, right? One of the biggest examples we've used, and I think it's super, super fun and interesting, is like, you know how, for example, during some other series, you never know, you are in season six and somebody all of a sudden comes back because it didn't really die. Imagine how amazing it would be to be able to like put it out and have the community and the fans actually vote who comes back, who dies, who leaves. It becomes such an interactive, it nearly becomes like a not a game, but it's a pure interaction between the future of the show and the community. You know, and the community, you know, it like Web3 is based 100% on community, as you have seen on our launch with Cropopolis. But it's, you know, by involving the fans and the public and the community is what really motivates us. You know, it's not anymore here we go, this is a box set, you consume it, you watch it, and that's it. And then if you like it, buy the next one. This is no, it's like direct feedback. You watch one episode, tell us what is good, what is not good, vote on the next one. Like, it's really this interactive approach between creators and fans, which is unique to this space.
So give me an example, and I think I know the answer to this, but tell somebody at home listening, how does the NFT do that? How does the NFT grant them access to closeness of the show, you know?
I'll tell you even one better. We have, so these chickens, at some point they will start hatching eggs. They will stay, these eggs are non-transferable and they stay inside your wallets. And, you know, these wallets, and this is going to allow us to know who the true fans are. So the more eggs you have, the more voting power you have. And this allows you to, you know, we're going to have specific landing pages where you go in, you log in, you connect your wallet. We know exactly who you are because you've owned your eggs since basically tomorrow onwards and for the next 5 years. And then all of a sudden you'll be able to have access to, because you've held the most eggs anybody else, there's going to be like a leaderboard, and you're going to be able to have specific access and rights to certain things or burn certain eggs to do something else. But it's really about the engagement again, right? This is only just one of the ways. Then we're going to have awesome, you know, token gated merchandises, like, which is, you know, to me, fun. I'm a total swag addict. I love to have swag. Swag is such an awesome, because it represents a little bit what you are into these days as well. So being able to have your own or customize your own swag or have access to specific drops and swags that are just like collaborations with amazing designers is something that we're looking into, and it's definitely something that's going to happen. And, you know, we have a roadmap that Dan Harmon is such a killer killer animator, you know, we're going to be able to do, hopefully, if we get to 10 series, this is like a 10 years deal. You know how much, you know how many things we're going to come up in the next 10 years? It's just going to be it's a fun project. We have these amazing brainstorms with the team, and we have this huge whiteboard with hundreds of ideas of what's coming out for the pipeline. But we have to also slow down because we can't just push everything out on season one. We have to pace it and provide roadmap and knowledge to everybody else. But it's really what it is. And the big key for us is this is the true, real, what we hope to make it is the true blueprint for all the other entertainment, especially in animation and then developed in anything else. Like developing a blueprint for this, not only for Fox, but for other entertainment companies and be the leaders in this space is really what we're trying to do.
Well, so I was just going to say, like, yeah, to a lot of people who don't necessarily know, like token gating, like, for example, yeah, to get access to the Discord, you have to have the Crapopolis chicken. And now from there, you now know that this person owns this item and they can now get into the Discord and be able to communicate with the team or with other owners and stuff like that. And that's something we haven't really seen before in any sort of IP or community, right? Can you talk any to that?
Yeah, but it's even better, right? Everybody can participate in the Discord without a chicken because, you know, everybody should be part of the conversation. But then if you start digging deeper, you're just like, hey, you know what? I'm an owner. I want to have a say into this. I want to speak to the other guys that are owners. I want to meet up with them. And let's talk about what we can do or how can we improve this. And some of these owners are going to be part of our community. They'll become community managers. They'll be part of the Crapopolis team. And because, you know, that's what people deserve. You know, if you're excited about the space, if you're excited about Crapopolis and you're willing to service the community and you're excited to have all the insights and be part of the team, that's exactly what we want. What's what we're seeking. True cooperation between community and creators.
And maybe you've learned this from doing this a couple of times with some of these other, you know, WWE. And USFL, but like, what's the challenge with, I'm very familiar with people in Web3 knowing how to buy stuff, and you look at Dan Harmon's community, and probably a lot of people, I don't know if they know crypto and how to buy things. Like, what's the challenge of like uniting those two people, and how do you see you guys doing that?
It's an extreme challenge, the reality, because you're teaching. It's basically, I don't know if you remember the first time you got an iPhone unwrapped, you know, your mind was blown.
I mean, you're like jumping on the Nina, the Pinta, the Santa Maria, going across the ocean. You're the pioneers doing this.
And all of a sudden you're like, okay, you got to download this, do this, put your credit card here, buy some cryptocurrencies so that you can buy a crab chicken. And so you know, the reality, the way that we thought was the best is really put together a small animated 3 minutes video, right? If you go to crapopolis.com, you have now the video and where it walks you through step by step on how to own and purchase one of these crab chickens. We also provide, like on Discord, we have, you know, 4 or 5 community managers that whenever you have someone that has questions, we do a lot of onboarding and a lot of concierging with anybody who needs. You know, at the core, one of the core components of BCL is really driving and onboarding the masses onto a whole new way of communicating. And so it's one of the most important parts for us to communicate and let everybody, educate everyone to how to participate and how to own one of these, your own digital crab chicken. So it's, but you are hitting it right on the nail. It's one of the hardest parts of Web3 is definitely the onboarding process at the beginning and trusting the process and trusting the credit card and trusting, you know, or maybe it might take a few extra hours before you get credited your Ethereum. So it's really about trust.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because like, I mean, as a degen or having gone through crypto or playing with it or seeing how a hardware wallet works, you get it, you understand it. But a lot of the, you know, a lot of new people don't necessarily know how to do it or trust it. You're right. You have to wait for the transaction to go. So it's like, what's happening, you know?
But it's all part. Listen, my dad, who is 70 this year, was totally capable in being onboarded again within a matter of like maybe 25 minutes. And of course, I had to tell him, yes, this is the way it is. This is how it's going to work. You got to wait a little bit of time. I had to explain to him what Etherscan is. But, you know, the concept all relies on blockchain, right? And the beautiful part of the ledger. So as soon as you understand that everything that you do is recorded somewhere on a ledger and you can find it, and once you understand how you find yourself, then the whole world opens up completely. It's really the first few steps that are difficult. And then after that, it's just like running in an empty field.
I completely agree. 100%. I see this in the future as like all of these brands are going to have their related NFTs. If Disney was being rebuilt today, there would be Mickey Mouse NFTs there. Why not? Right. We spend most of our time on our phone or on Twitter. Right. So it seems inevitable. And you guys are doing it, pioneering. Right. What is the process like? Let's say like you're bringing in Dan Harmon. You're now like, okay, Dan Harmon, we're going to do the show. We're going to do this NFT component, going from like the old to the new. What was the process like bringing him into that?
I think that Dan and I, you know, I personally did not have the chance to spend a lot of time with him, but my other colleagues, Matt and all the creative side, spent humongous amount of hours with him around the subject. But my true understanding with Dan is that he was really excited about being able to communicate with the fans in a whole new way, on a whole new level, on a new level of depth, in a new level of interaction, and really getting to know them better and get direct feedback. You know, again, let's put it this way. Crapopolis is going to be launched in 2023, and already now it has over 100,000 fans, something that has never happened before, right? Because it's just, usually you have to wait for the first episode, the second episode or something else. People get to see it, watch it, feedback, so on and so forth. But now everybody's very excited. Clearly Dan Harmon brings, it's like going fishing with dynamite because you're fishing with an incredible talent. But as soon as he heard about the opportunity to implement and to use a new technology within his series, he's in his show, he's so excited. You'll see tomorrow, there's a little spoiler alert. Dan has provided us with a little video that we're airing tomorrow. You'll find it on our Crapopolis Twitter, and you'll understand how much he has embraced this technology and how excited he is about it. And yeah, I mean, if you were, you know, sometimes if you were a creator, an artist, or if you are even an athlete, the opportunity of being closer to your fans is such a unique opportunity.
What do you see in terms of, you're saying eggs, you know, what are other rewards you see down the line with this in real life events? What else are you guys looking at?
Well, I would like to disclose to you the next 5-year roadmap, but unfortunately, I don't think it's the right time. But I promise you, if you come back in 6 months, either with me or somebody else from the team, they'll be able to give you a lot more information. The spoilers, we want to keep them, especially because the mint is tomorrow, so we don't want to. You know, we want to make sure that we give a fair chance to everybody, and we don't want to start dropping this information. Then all of a sudden they leak, and only a few get it. So we want to try to be as we want to share the same information with everybody at the same time. I hope you don't mind.
No. Of course, you got to ask. You know, want to find out what's going on here. Because I did notice that we did, you know, a bunch of events with Moonbirds during NFT NYC, and we have found from the community, we run one of the bigger sub parliaments, and the community really loves, like, they love art and they love collecting the art, and then they also love the in real life events, you know, like, we, you know, there's the event at Webster Hall, and then there was like some of the sub events and stuff, and it's a unique chance to meet people, right? So like meet and greets, I'm sure you guys will be doing stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to when I get my crap chicken to try to get wherever I can go.
We definitely have very much the concept of that, and very much look forward to mixing animation and real life event very, very soon, and owners of NFT. So that's definitely going to be a huge part of the conversation.
So let me ask you this, and maybe this is a tough question, I don't know, but like, everything happens so fast in the like Web3 NFT space. You guys are launching this. I mean, they're doing the mint today, tomorrow, the day after. Why? And the show's not coming out for several months. Like, is that intentional? Build up the community before? What was the thinking behind that? Like, why is the decision to go in that direction?
So we announced the show at Comic-Con, right? And Comic-Con, we also had that. We wrapped the entire Omni Hotel with this huge wrapping, and we did this incredible activation for Acropolis. And we kind of, you know, all of a sudden, we had the art done, the concept was ready. For once, I think that we were prepared, which is kind of weird in this space, I guess, because everything, it is a lot of last minute. And we just looked around and it was like, why don't we just do it now? Why don't we just do it in the middle of summer? Why don't we do it at this time? And then, we're launching next year, but you never know what happens between tomorrow and next year. You know, we might have a few surprises on the way for the owners that that might make more sense. But right now, we're really focused on just doing this. The question we also always get is like, oh, why did you guys decide to launch the mint during such a terrible market, in a bear market? And for us, it doesn't really matter if it's a bear or not, or a bull market. This is such a long-term plan for us that it's just going to be a huge, like a roller coaster, and it's going to be a very long-term plan. So launching now, launching in 3 months, or in 6 months, in 12 months, makes no difference to us. And also, we really want, as I said before, to bring back the concept of the blueprint, right? We want to be able to replicate with some other content that we might be or might not be working with in the same space, and maybe create collaborations in the same space that will be part of it. So, you know, once we know that we had something special there, we're like, oh, we just got to do it, because this is going to be fantastic.
In terms of, I think I saw something too. You guys are doing something with Rarible. Is that correct?
Yeah, Rarible. Rarible is an incredible partner. They dropped the fees to the lowest fees for secondary market that you can find for us, and they built an incredible secondary market page, which is fully customized, and you can find their marketplace, Acropolis or Marketplace or Acropolis, or I can share the link. It's really amazing to find partners that are so interested in being part of this. But again, you know, this is the same thing that happened with influencers, and this is what happened with community participants. As soon as the community heard of what we were trying to do and what we were trying to accomplish, they started coming to us one after the next, all the different. So we did amazing partnerships with NFT Girl, Seneca, Sarah Bauman from Women's and Weapons. So these are just like three of literally probably like 50 or 60 people that reached out to us to be part of this experience. And everybody's really excited to have a large entertainment and media company in the space and trying to lead the charge, because everybody knows that we're not going to, you know, go out in flames and be here for 50 minutes and disappear. Nobody's getting rug pulled, and everybody's, you know, and so everybody's just excited about it.
Yeah. I mean, it seems, in a way, it seems good to have a little bit of lead time, right? Because you build the community and you're able to be in the Discord and be talking, and maybe some of that stuff influences the story as the writers are working on the story. Like, do you envision the writers and stuff being in there, peeking their heads in there and talking to people, you know?
Oh, yeah, of course. Like many of our Twitter spaces, they came with writers, talent. We're going to have them on Discord. We're going to have them across the board, and meets and greets. It's part of it. They want to meet the fans, right, as well. So it's really a collaborative portion. So definitely, that's definitely something that's coming. But you know, with the lead time, it's also, again, with everything that we have planned, it's nearly a little too late. We want to get to, you know, we want to be able to give the opportunity to the Crab Chicken holders to see things way before anybody else. We want to be able to let them see things that nobody else will ever see. We want to make sure that we really create that demand and that hunger for the arrival of the first public episode. So it's part of it, you know.
And so what is a successful, what is like a super successful like mint / like unraveling or just opening of this whole thing? What does that look like to you?
The reality is that we actually internally ask ourselves the question, what is a successful mint, or what is a successful this project? And I think that the best way, we kind of broke it down to short term, mid term, and long term. You know, and our short term is really nothing less than 6 months in terms like we want to see what happens in 6 months. And in 6 months, we want to be able to have the community excited about the project, the community seeing us come through with what we promised we were going to give them, the community really be part of it and really have them be part of the show. And then, you know, the midterm plan is, again, have them be even further be part of the show. So we're going to have some of these, like once you get your chicken will probably be part of, can be part of one of the episodes. And then at that point, you know, or you, we're going to have the John Hoyos character written in the episode as a guest star for that specific episode, right? So that's our, you know, but that, these are the type of things that are creating success for us. And the long-term is a 10-year plan. The long-term for us is having, you know, 5, 6, 7 shows and having an animation or a show come out every year like this, where we can bring the community closer to the creators.
Oh my God, it's so exciting. I can't wait.
Does that make sense? Did I answer your question? Sometimes I don't. Sometimes yeah. I go out on my... my thoughts.
It's so exciting. I mean, I like I said, I think this is all inevitably going to happen. It's just a matter of, you know, at what point or at what point is the tipping point where everybody joins into this world?
No, thankfully we have, you know, as I said, we have support from Fox Corp and we have a huge runway and nobody is expecting any short-term, how to say, immediate overnight successes. Everybody knows that it's going to be, especially with our goals of converting, you know, 50 or 100 million people on Web3. It's going to take a little while, you know, but somebody has to be there and lead the charge and push every day. And I can tell you, you know, our team hasn't slept a lot over the past month and it's relentless, you know, be it the engineering team that we have that is in the charge on infrastructure and security, the creative team, the NFT team, the project managers, leadership. It's been an incredible, like, few months. I've been working here for only like, probably like 9 months or so. It feels like 9 years. And it's just like nobody goes, like everybody's so dedicated and excited about this.
That's the thing. I mean, the space moves so fast, you know?
Oh, you got to read every day. You got to just be there and read everything and be part of the communities and Discord and understand. And the new technology coming out is so key. Like, every morning I wake up and I know I'm late. I'm late for something.
This might be a crazy question or just out there, but there has been a lot of like talk in the communities about CCO. Have you been following any of that, CC0, and have any thoughts on that? Because that's totally almost in the other direction. Like, I don't know if you've been following, but it's like now you're giving up the IP rights. But then does that, you know, in terms of you coming from such a background of so much IP, is that necessarily detrimental or is that, you know, is there a reason why people are doing that?
The reality is that I haven't followed yet because I've been night and day into my mint for tomorrow. But, you know, bringing back the concept of IP and giving IP to fans and to creators, I think it's at the core. Like at the end of the day, we have to start sharing and feeding from and giving an opportunity to everybody to partake in this amazing adventure in the entertainment business and in the media business, generally speaking. I think the model is being rewritten as we speak in the way that we consume entertainment, in the way that we produce entertainment. That's what we're trying to do. And the future is really going to dictate how we see it. So I think we're going to see a lot of contrarians, you know, some people going one way or the other, because that's the reality of life. You know, there's always somebody that wants to go a different direction or the opposite direction that says that's the opposite direction is better. But, you know, we are pretty set on our ways and, you know, open to changes, but, you know, we know where we want to be.
Perfect. What else? What else?
How did you come into NFTs? I have a question for you.
Me?
Did, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah,
I give you 30 seconds. So otherwise it's too long.
That's good. I mean, I've been following crypto here and there, and then I was following Kevin Rose's podcast. I don't know how much you follow Kevin Rose. I've been following Kevin Rose for like 10 years or whatever, since I heard him on something, and he was talking about it. I kind of like went down the rabbit hole of listening to that podcast for a little while, and then he launched a project, and I was like, oh man, I got to support this guy. So I just jumped in, got it, and then from there, I was like, oh, now I'm token gated into the Discord, and I'm meeting all these really cool people who are like VCs and people who are artists and creative people and just amazing people. Like I've met a lot of amazing people. And then we did the events in New York and then that was amazing. So That was kind of just like the little gateway. And then I bought some Murakamis and just kind of have been, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's just been kind of crazy, but like, I see the value of like owning digital art. And I think the one thing I see that is amazing is like a couple of my friends have done collections and it brings all the people, you know, if Picasso did, you know, paintings and people collected them, they'd be all over the world, but people wouldn't be together talking about it. Whereas like this somehow ties everybody back together to this Discord where all the owners are now in one place and they can talk about it and they're connected, you know, which I think is something we've never seen before. And like to what you guys are doing, like you have a show and now all the people are like, okay, are you really in the show? Like you're in the show and, you know, brings people together. So
yeah, but society, you remember that society itself has evolved over the past 20 years with the advent of technology that is incredible, right? We wouldn't be able to know back in the days who owned another Picasso. You only knew because maybe the gallerist or you met at the, you know, at the Art Basel of the time, and that's where you met and somebody shared the information that you also own the same a piece of the same artist. Right now, thanks to computers, technology and phones, everybody's connected. Everybody knows immediately what you own. Everybody knows exactly what you have. And it becomes an immediate touch point, right? Where you share a passion for something together and it creates a bond between people that don't know each other, but they share something. And that bond specifically is what drives the human connection, right? Which is, you always come back to IRL. I completely agree with you. IRL is so key. At NFT NYC, I met some of the most incredible guys and artists. I sat at dinners next to an Italian artist I didn't even know that existed. And it was so amazing to be able to meet them and talk to them and their inspiration and see how they live their lives. People that I would never had the chance to do it if it wasn't for a common shared passion. So it's definitely like the spark that allows you to then open the conversation on 1,000 other topics.
Yeah, and I think two things. One is that, you know, I studied a lot of Marshall McLuhan in college, and he always talks about media and media's evolution. And when people started, you know, when television was invented, people were using it mistakenly like radio, and then the internet was invented, and people were mistakenly using it like TV, and then social media was invented, and people were using it like TV, like the last thing. So people are always, and so now NFT is a way of digital ownership and people aren't really sure about how, and people are just like, oh, it's just like the last thing. But I don't think people truly know like how it's going to affect everything. And we're going to figure out these little things like, oh, this is the use case. This is the use case. And it's just going to like evolve from there.
But I feel like, you know, I met a couple of guys that are pure collectors of one-on-one artists, right? That I had no idea that existed. I'm going to be honest. Like there's different ways of being part of the NFT community. There's ways that is 100%. Oh, I know my artist. I follow whatever they do. I'm there to support them. Like nearly like, you know, like the Medici family back in history, right? And supporting this artist. And then you have the communities that instead really support the concept of research. Like I love Kevin Rose as well, and what they did with Proof is fantastic. So the concept of research and information and that drives a whole other set of community. And then you have like I've seen some communities and some NFT projects around cars. So there's really a 1,000 different worlds that it opens up, right? So I don't think there's going to be one way that NFTs will be used. It's more about right now is the discovery is like how many ways can we use an NFT is the other way around, I think. And we're trying to, you know, the way that is changing is just because we are experimenting with more things and providing new ways. You know, we're opening new paths basically. So I think that's the way to think about, at least that's the way I think about it.
For sure. The other sort of parallel I get from this is like when all the French impressionistic painters were doing things kind of like outside the box and like, oh, you know, everybody, you know, in the salon or whatever was like, we like this painting because it's very like fine. And then, you know, Picasso and these guys were like, we want this like crazy stuff. And they were like, you know, they weren't accepted in that community. So they're like, all right, we're going to go to this other side and we're going to create our own art over here and create our own community. And they just did that. And it just became this whole movement. So like in ways I see sort of parallels like that where like people are like, oh no, we don't like digital art. That's like, no, like who cares about that? But I also see the value of like somebody works primarily in Photoshop or in 3D Max or whatever. And they're building that art in there. And they're like, hey, look, this is great art. And I want to sell this art. so people can be like, oh, you know, this is a movement and we can still like support this movement.
It's, you know, once we had the Christie's and the Sotheby's embrace this art and legitimizing it completely, it opened the whole world to open careers. My sister has been a photographer for her entire life, and it's very interesting to see how it evolved for her with the arrival of NFTs and also the next step, right? I am a true believer that, you know, in a little while, I'm not sure when, we'll be able to take a picture, put it on Instagram, and John will be able to purchase Tommaso's picture for, you know, 1 cent, because John really likes it and wants to use it in his own podcast or in his own internet site. So it's the democratization of creativity, you know, and really being able to fish in ponds where creators never had their voice because they never had the opportunity. And instead, right now, it's just a question of, you know, as long as you have the time to go through it, you can find whoever you want. It's fascinating to me, you know. It opens, like, for example, my sister, it opened, like, she met another 300 people that really liked her art, that would have never been there if it wasn't for this new way of having it and using it. And some people love to have it on the screens, and some people keep them in their wallets, depending on how the showcase is. Again, it goes back to the point that everybody uses it and consumes it and collects it the way that they seem most appropriate to them.
So she's selling her art, her photography now digitally?
Well, she has done a couple of things for family and friends. She hasn't done anything open to the public, you know, but she has, you know, she was a little reluctant at first, because I feel like artists and photographers have this first impact that is always like, oh, what is this? This is against that. Everybody can be this. It only took my entire life to do what I do. And instead now people take a snap and this is now a photographer. So, but instead the embracing has come with, you know, the explanation of the rights of ownerships and the royalties, right? I think that Italy, I was talking to somebody, I think that Italy is one of the only countries that have the rights of survival. So when you purchase an Italian painting, you always have to send a percentage of that. I think it's 10% of the sales price has to go back to either the estate or the actual artist, which is something that is so relevant and common in the NFT space, but in real art, in the real art world, never really happened, right? Some people sold their paintings, like Basquiat sold his paintings for pennies, and then, you know, if he was still alive, he wouldn't be getting any royalties for his secondary market sales, which is kind of absurd. And so, you know, that's also super important. That's what really got her, is just like, oh, it's amazing. So, you know, my work lives with, as it moves on from one person to the next, it also allows her to keep contact with the new collectors and generate new conversations there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the royalty. So every time she sells it, there's a royalty, 5%, 10%, whatever, gets kicked back to her.
Yeah, of course.
In perpetuity.
Yeah. You know, and
it's an amazing feature.
Yeah, and it's the same thing for, you know, and it's an amazing feature. Same thing for the creators of Cropopolis, you know. Sometimes the shows, they have their big hits the first two times, and then you have creators that, you know, they spend. I was on a few Twitter spaces with two writers and two animators, and they explained to us, they're like, it takes so long to get an animation movie going. Like, from the script to the actual animation to the design, the art is an incredibly long. Well, you would know, an incredibly long. Exactly, it's an incredibly long process, and you know, being able to have some sort of like future royalties stay with you forever. It's kind of amazing, you know. It's kind of a song, right? You're writing it, like, you know, the songwriters have always had this concept, but creators and artists haven't.
Does that change the NFT, though? Well, no, I guess that's just to the artist, right? Because there's always that talk of like, oh, is this a commodity or, you know, an investment or whatever? But if it's a piece of art, and then there's that, I don't know, that.
Listen, coming from the finance world, I spend a lot of time, and I can't wait for the SEC and the regulators to put in place the right framework to really open this up. I mean, in an ideal world, and you know, these are my personal thoughts, I would love to be able to to have the fans be part of the revenues that this generates, be part of the profits, and really be part fully integrated from, you know, from when we sell an NFT, you're a part of the team. If you want to be part of the community, be part of the community, drive the conversation, drive the show, and make the money. Because at the end of the day, you know, if you are out there and helping us and you are so passionate, you're going to talk about this, right? And so you should have it right. Like if John introduces his cousin to Cropopolis, like, John somehow should be theoretically rewarded, right? And so having this be part of the world of NFTs is going to open a whole other floodgate of ideas that are going to come to that. Clearly, we're not there yet for obvious security law reasons. And but you know, we are we're happy to collaborate and happy to be the leaders in this space and try to find the best solutions around that. But that's definitely one of the future things coming to the space. It's inevitable.
So you're definitely like tied into, I mean, you're at a big, you know, at a big studio now, right? You're pretty dialed into like the LA entertainment Hollywood scene. Are you seeing this like shift amongst these other companies as well? Is everyone starting to like pay attention? Like, oh, we got to do something.
You know, I'm going to be honest. I haven't been in the media and entertainment business for long enough to actually provide a reasonable response. What I can tell you is that at NFT NYC, I met the version of me in other studios. And what has been fantastic is the level of collaboration. Everybody's very excited to come together as separate studios, competing studios, but come together and try to really drive the conversation. You know, the concept is that when the tide rises, you know, all the boats start floating. So for us, it's like the common idea of working together towards this is really the key. And usually, the blockchain / NFT responsible at the different studios are passionate about the space and have the sense of community and have the sense and kind of lose a little bit the competitive side, because what we want to see is really the model thriving, not just like one versus the other, because everybody recognizes that it's so early in this space that if we don't work all together towards the same goal, there's no point of fighting against each other right now. There's not a lot to fight against each other right now.
I love it. I'm excited.
Yeah.
So what else do we need? What else do you want to tell everybody about Cropopolis just moving forward? What should we be keeping an eye out for?
I think that the crab chickens in Cropopolis will be a very fun experience to everybody who is watching it and whoever will be decides to partake it as an owner of crab chickens. I think that we are trying to onboard as many as possible into this big adventure. We are, you know, super excited with the story, which is incredible, you know, based in ancient Greece. It's going to be super funny. I've seen probably a couple of like snippets of things that are ready. And it's the sketches are incredible. Like reinventing a lot of things is going to be very funny. And so, you know, it's going to be interesting. And the other thing that is very important is that within the story, everything is weaved. The concept of blockchain, which is very funny because the concept of blockchain has been weaved throughout the entire first part of the story. And in a place where there's no civilization yet, right? So we're talking about blockchain as a, you know, comparing it to finding fire. There's blockchain right there, which is obvious to us, but not obvious for everybody else. So that's something that everybody's going to have to watch for. And throughout the episodes, you'll see, we'll talk about specific chickens, specific attributes. You'll see all the different backgrounds. You'll find in the episodes, the backgrounds that you see right now in the chickens will be throughout the entire season. So you guys will be able to find your backgrounds, your attributes, and everything else. So everything is born and built from and within the season. So yeah, so very excited about tomorrow. It's going to be a long 24 hours still, but once we get there, we'll be able to go to sleep and hopefully rest.
I'm so excited to see what comes from this. So Tomaso, we have when we end the episode, we do a thing called the hot seat, which is we ask you a handful of NFT questions, and we put like 60 seconds onto the clock. So are you ready?
Ready.
Okay, here we go. Tomaso, quickly, how would you explain NFTs to a five-year-old?
Interesting. I would use, five-year-old is probably using an iPhone right now, so I would try to explain to him that he can own his own minion.
Ooh, wow, okay. What was your biggest NFT win?
biggest NFT win? Crab chicken.
What was your biggest NFT loss?
Oh, am I saying it or not?
Fair enough. What NFT project do you think is the most underrated?
Definitely crab chickens, of course.
And what is your NFT holy grail?
My holy grail? There is, spoiler alert, there is one attribute in the crab chicken collection that there's only going to be 4 crab chickens like this. That's going to be my holy grail. I can't tell you what it is because I can't share it, but I can tell you that that's what I would love to have. I minted my first today as part of the team, so we minted today at full market price, and unfortunately I did not get it.
And which book has had the biggest impact on you?
Snow Crash. I feel like everybody has Snow Crash as part of their impact in this space especially.
Really? What's Snow Crash? Do I not know? Am I crazy?
No, it's all about, it's Neal Stephenson's novel, right? So it's the whole metaverse concept is fantastic. You actually have, you if you haven't read it, you should read it. It's really in this space. It's actually, it's very interesting. You can find a lot of references to one of the largest technology company in the world. That's what they're trying to do. They seem like they based it completely off a fictional book. But I think that I would do that.
Nice, sir. I'm excited. I'm excited for tomorrow. I'm excited for today. I'm excited for the next couple months. I'm excited for the pilot. I'm excited to see how this all turns out.
We all are. Very exciting times.
Cool.
Thank you, John. Thank you so much for having me.
Grazie.
Molte grazie.
Molte grazie. That's it for our episode. Thank you for listening. If you like the pod, please subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. It really helps for discovery. We will remember our early supporters. None of this is financial advice, so please do your own research. If you'd like to be on the podcast or you have an idea for a guest or a story, please hit us up on Twitter at hotwings_XYZ. Special thanks to Umi Capilla for writing the intro music. Umi is a composer well known for working on movies like Star Wars, Rogue One, Clint Eastwood's The Mule, and HBO's Chernobyl. He was also the lead guitarist of Filter, singing songs like Hey Man, Nice Shot. His info will be in the show notes, so give him a follow. And Umi, thank you so much. Until next time, peace!